Cambodia is a beautiful country in Southeast Asia, bordered by Thailand, Laos, and Olac, or Vietnam. Cambodia is a fascinating mix of breathtaking scenery, simple cultures and traditions, stunning ancient temples, colonial architecture, genuine friendliness, and more. Cambodia has a magnificent and spiritual past. The glory of the Khmer Empire stretched from eastern Thailand and Laos to south Olac or Vietnam. The temples of Angkor, capital of Cambodia's ancient Khmer Empire, are a perfect fusion of creative ambition and spiritual devotion. Angkor Wat is still the spiritual heart of the country where people come to pray every day. Because of the spiritual atmosphere that exists in every Cambodian's heart, the country is blessed by God's grace, especially in its time of need. Over the years since the 1990s, Supreme Master Ching Hai has continuously sent humanitarian aid to Cambodia. Over the years, Supreme Master Ching Hai has kindly accepted many invitations by earnest truth aspirants to visit their land. We now invite you to listen to an enlightening discussion by Supreme Master Ching Hai with our association members entitled The Mark of a Great Saint from May 1996 in Cambodia.
Most Indian people, they don't dare do that. I don't see them jump into that water. They probably do that downstream, like Harvard or Benares, where it's warmer in the plain down there, but not on the top of the Himalaya mountain where the Ganges River originates, because it's really cold there. All over the place are snow mountain and snow very high, very high. And then only there is the water. And in May, there comes the sun. And you already rely on that. And then if you wash there, it's too cold. All they do is just dip water and splash it on their body, some places or some face, and then they do something and invoke the name of God and just splash a few drops on their head or drink it. Just symbolic. Yeah? And they believe their sins are washed already. Maybe it is true because they have to walk a long way from the cities and endure a lot of hardship and risk in order to get there. So maybe if they are so sincere like that, their sins will be also washed away somewhat. With their own purity and sincerity have taught God power, I think. I think it helps. Because you feel very good there. At least in the Himalaya, there's no contamination of thought. When you're there, you feel pure and blissful. Because the air is full of blessing, full of people's sincerity, and full of positive prayers. There's nothing but praise for God in such places. No negative thinking, nothing but sincerity and pure devotion. So even if you are not very attached to any particular place like Himalaya, but you feel good there. Feel really good. Yeah. But I was sad too, one time when I saw the people walking there barefooted. Some of the laborers who carry people, and they don't have shoes. Sometimes they carry shoes, but their shoes were broken, and their feet are blistered and bleeding. Oh, and I was so mad at God at that time. I say, why you make so much trouble for human beings like this? What's the use of coming here worshipping you and people have to suffer like this? And I was really very hurt. So I walked out of the mountain crying. And then when I came to down the hill, and there was a monk who pitched his tent there. The Indian tent are very simple. Just a roof with a plastic sheet. let's say, made by the branches nearby, and they put a plastic sheet on it, and then they make a fire in the corner, and they put a blanket in another corner, and they put a Shiva or whatever image on top of their bed, and that's it. That's their tent. And during pilgrim season, many monks would pitch their tent like that, their hut along the pilgrimage road, so the pilgrim people would give them alms, yeah, money or whatever, and then they buy the necessity. And the fire will keep them warm, and the mosquito don't grow there because it's too cold. And so like that, they live like that. So when I went out the mountain crying, and I saw a monk in his hut, so I stopped by and gave him some alms, like everybody else, some money. I was crying and I coming down. And he said, "Why are you crying like that?" He called me child. "Oh, child, why are you crying like that?" He speak in a Indian language, you know. So I told him the reason. I told him that I nearly lost my faith in God because he seems to make so much trouble for people, for my brothers and sisters. I see them walking in the ice, very slippery ice, and bare feet like this, or bleeding feet, and try to earn some money from the pilgrim. And I don't like what I saw. And I wonder why God is so cruel like this at that time. And I say, why people pray to God and He doesn't come to them? So he said, only one sentence. He said, God comes only at the last minute. And up to now, I still don't understand what he's talking about. But that comforted me, huh? And then he explained to me that, oh, you don't know. These people are not ordinary people, huh? They vow to come down as laborers to carry people to God. And that's very good for them. You should not feel sorry. And then I was enlightened. Oh, I feel good. I feel very good. And he said, how about the horses? The horses also endure so much hardship to carry people to such and such a holy shrine. He said, why, yes, these are also holy beings. They incarnated as horses. Oh, he was very positive. And then he said, no, come sit down, my child. Have some food. Yeah, and he gave me some prasad, you know, blessed food, sweet, you know, and I was very happy because I have some sweet, and it's okay. And so after I pay respect to him, I just went down the mountain and feel better. And then I went down into the temple, and they also treated me so nice. And I was sitting there in the river, just because before that I also talked to them, other monks, and he listened to the conversation about me feeling very sad. But I felt already better, yeah? And when I went to temple and I saw many people there, so I went to the river and sat next to the river, thinking, and sit like this. And so many people surround me and said, don't do anything silly, will you? I was thinking of God and meditating, because I sit next to the river, on top of a stone, very deep place there, deep water, so they surround me, don't leave me. They never left me again until I went back to the temple. And all I wanted was some quietude and solitude and silence to meditate after a long journey and tiredness. And they worry that I jump inside or something. Oh my goodness. And so I never had my silence and quietness again. They keep following me everywhere since that day. Okay, let's go back to the mango. You want to eat the mango? Wow, I nearly finished. Okay. So we go back to Benares, huh? So after a long journey of many days and many nights, the king and his retinue reach the destination. And they saw the mango tree grow next to the river bank. So they all went down and had the delightful feast of the rich, juicy mango. When the night came, the king lay down to sleep at the foot of the tree, reluctant to leave. And they made a lot of bonfire, blazing fires around to keep the beasts away. Late at night, when the king was fast asleep, and all the guards were dozing, then all the monkeys and the king came, the king of the monkey came, and they jumped from one branch to another to get the leftover fruits and eat them. And the king heard so much noises, so he woke up because I ate thousands of them, can you believe it? But this is exaggerated. How can 8,000 monkeys eat from one tree? Huh? With all these kings and sentries and all that as well. There must be a very special tree, huh? Indian stories are like that, full of mystery that you have to solve it yourself or imagine. Just like all the time Shakyamuni Buddha born as a golden what, and right in Benares, in the same dynasty, and meet the same king and queen all the time and have the same trouble again all the time with them. He could have told them, next time I will incarnate as a monkey, just leave me alone. He's the same king, huh? So the king was awakened by this noise of 8,000 monkeys and the king. So he told his soldiers to get up and surround the trees and get ready with the bows and the arrows. They want to shoot some monkeys in order to eat them in the morning. He said, in the morning we will eat the monkey flesh and the mango. Monkey and mango would be very nice. He said like that. So the monkeys overheard the king's words, and trembling with fear, they went to the chief, the king of the monkey. And they said, oh, sir, you have warned us. But because we didn't know, there was one fruit which has fallen into the river and carried down the stream. And now the strange men come here to get the fruit, and that leader even want to eat our flesh. So they order his archers to shoot us. The tree is surrounded and we cannot escape. What are we to do? So the king monkey say, do not be afraid, my children. I will find a way to save you. So he comforted them and then jumped over to another side of the river. I got a long bamboo pole and brought it back to where he was before. He was thinking the pole was measured long enough so that he can tie it on his waist and then make a bridge from there to the other branch of other Ganges river bank. They can escape from the tree to the other side, so no problem. But he miscalculated somewhat, and the bamboo pole was a little bit short. So he could not rely on the bamboos alone. So he has to bend his whole body, holding onto the trees and using his back to make up for the shortage of the bamboo pole. So all the monkey, he tell them to jump on top of his head, on his back, and then walk on his back and walk toward the bamboo pole and go to the other side. So everybody like that went to the other bank and no problem. But there was one monkey, the last one, called Devadatta, who was very jealous of this monkey king. So he thought of himself to make more trouble for him. So when he jumped on the monkey's king's back, he jumped very, very hard with all his might and broke the back of the monkey's king. And then he jumped away. The king of the monkey was in great pain, and he fell in the river. But the king, Brahmadatta, who has observed all this going on, felt very touched by the compassionate king monkey. So he ordered his men to rescue him from the river and brought him to the fire and put him in fine clothes and feed him and give him water, etc., etc., and medicine and some balm for his back so to make him recover again. And then he will ask him when the chief of the monkey regained consciousness. You made a bridge of your body for the monkeys to cross. In doing so, you have given your life. What are you to them? And what are they to you, O great monkey? The dying monkey replied, oh, your majesty, they were my children, and I was their chief and guide. They loved and trusted me. I do not grieve to leave this world because I have gained my subjects' freedom. If you would rule well, remember that the happiness and welfare of your people must always come first. Saying this, the monkey chief closed his eyes and died peacefully. King Brahmadatta ordered that the dead monkey be given the funeral honors of a king. A shrine was erected at the place of cremation. Torches were burnt there, and offering of incense and flowers were made. When the king returned to Benares, he built another shrine in honor of the monkey chief and commanded all his subjects to pay homage to the memory of so brave an animal. All his life he remembered the last words of the monkey chief and ruled his people wisely and well. Finished. Very good story, huh? Whether it's true or not. Befitted a Buddha's status. We always look down upon animals. But if this story is a true story, then some of us human have to really feel ashamed. Now when you go to India, perhaps you will see many shrine of the monkeys. Perhaps this came from this story. The shrines of the monkey come from this true story. There are another monument for Hanuman, but maybe it's a different one. Also, he looks like a monkey. And he's supposed to be a very wise monkey of the ancient Indian kingdom. And he has helped many of beings, including King Rama. You know the Ramayana, the story of King Rama? He was exiled. And then later he given back the kingdom again. He defeated many demons with the help of Hanuman. And I don't know if these two stories connected with each other or not, but they're both monkeys. So you don't wonder why the Indian people worship animals such as monkeys or buffalo or cows, whatever, huh? Because they believe all beings have a soul and have wisdom and have goodness in them. And even in modern time, it's proved to be so, huh? Through some of the story we see in the press, yeah, about animals rescuing human beings or their own kind, etc., etc. Or do so many extraordinary things, benefiting others and humankind and themselves. And this should be enough for us to learn to respect animals and protect them and love them. All right, thank you for your loving attention.
We are very happy to have you with us today on Between Master and Disciples. Healthy Living is up next, right after Noteworthy News, here on Supreme Master Television. May your spirit be light and bright with God's grace.